Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Been a big day. About to get bigger. What's going on? Welcome back. We go to our third and final hour. My name is Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California, just as I am every single day. Great to be here. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Allow me to get off that thread of last hour. Get back to business. I know a lot of you don't want to because you like what you just heard. But why don't we talk some ball? We are joined right now by the head football coach at the University of Miami. Second season with the Hurricanes. He led Miami to a bowl game in his first season as head coach. Miami is out fast. They're 3-0. They're in first in the ACC. They are number 8 in both polls, and they've got a big one coming up on October 10th. Miami is ranked 8th. Clemson is top ranked. Manny Diaz is the head coach of the Canes. Manny, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So you're 3-0 on the season. You're coming off a blowout win over Florida State. You got a bye week to get ready for Clemson. Let me talk to you about Florida State for a minute. 52-10 in a game where you got out to a 38-3 halftime lead. What did you make of the team's performance overall, Manny, and in particular on key third downs when possession obviously could go either way?
Yeah, that really was the story of the day. Our first two drives, we got the third or fourth down, I think, five or six times. And if any one of those goes a different way, it's a different ball game. But when you have a quarterback like Derek King, you know, those plays count. And, you know, he was excellent in those situations. We made some tough catches and some tough runs. And then once we got ahead, it became a feeding frenzy, and our guys really had a complete performance.
Manny Diaz joining us. Since you mentioned King, let me ask you about him. He arrived in the offseason. He has looked really good at quarterback. What has he brought to the program, and how impressed have you been with how he's handled that transition?
He's unbelievable. I mean, everybody can see the throwing, the running, you know, the actual things that happen between the lines. But what he has done for our program is who he is every day and who he is in the locker room. I mean, he is a guy that everyone on the team respects and trusts. He's not a rah-rah big speech guy, but he's a guy that you'll see go up and talk to anybody on the team. We're a more connected team this year, and the reason why is because Derek King is our quarterback.
Manny, I would imagine that as a head coach, especially with some young guys like that, you would tell me and you would tell them consistency. Consistency is important. Is that what you're talking about when you describe him? And how important is it just to be consistent every single day?
Greatness is being consistently good. You know, I mean, that's exactly it. And what we have tried to do this year is really examine how hard it is to win a football game and have a proper respect for that and what it takes every week to just, you know, win a game. And whether you're playing Florida State or Clemson or whoever's next on the schedule, and you've got to rebuild that process every week, and the guys have really bought in. But like I said, when you have leaders like Derek and some of the other guys on our team, that really helps too.
I think that's really interesting what you just said, that we've examined how hard it is to win a football game, and then you have to rebuild that process every single week. In terms of process, like, Derek comes in and he's made it look almost seamless. What's amazing to me is you also brought in Rhett Lashley from SMU as your offensive coordinator. As it turns out, there could not have been a more challenging offseason to bring in a new coordinator, and yet it seems like things are really clicking. How would you describe the impact that he has made since arriving?
Yeah, Rhett and our entire offensive staff have been phenomenal. Garen Justice, our offensive line coach, and Rob Likens with the wide receivers. As you mentioned, you know, we had four spring practices, no scrimmages in the spring, you know, and then we're apart. You know, we're just communicating on Zoom for all this time. And then not to mention in our first three games, two out of the three opponents basically lined up in a completely different defense than what we had seen in scouting them. So their ability to make quick adjustments and get the players to say, hey, listen, what we practiced for all week, you can throw that out the window, and here's now this. That's really been impressive, and to the players' credit, they've taken to it and have rolled right with the punches.
We're talking to Manny Diaz. You know, Manny, back to that point about how we have to rebuild this thing every single week, and we have to continue to build on that. You made the point, quote, good teams improve while they're winning. They don't wait until the pain of a loss and then all of a sudden have that urgency to get better. Good teams improve when everything is good and people are patting them on the back. I guess that's another way of saying, you know, don't wait until you get sick. In other words, how do you develop that mindset to improve when everything is going well?
That's right. Well, what you have to really look at is what we're putting out on film. You know, and the film doesn't say a win or loss. It's just a performance. And every individual has a performance. And obviously every player, you know, coaches included, everyone can do things better. And so let's just not, I mean, obviously, yes, the goal is to win and we're happy when we do win. But when we come back after the day after the game, let's tell the truth about each other and let's look at the film and see what we like and what we don't like. Let's fix. And to your point, let's not wait until we're sick, you know, to go to the doctor and find out how to fix it.
Manny Diaz joining us. You know, a few months back also, you were asked about, you know, what about the program? Where have you made your biggest strides? Seems to me you could have talked about the offense, you could have talked about the defense, you could have talked about strength, you could talk about how the team is faster, but that's not what you did. You actually answered it by something you kind of touched on a few moments ago. You were talking about the people, quote, our people. I think that's what I've noticed. That's what the players have noticed. That's what they tell me, the change in the people. Like, what does that change look like, and how significant is that?
You know, you don't really know until you get in the games. You hope you know, but you don't really know. It felt like, even going back to our off-season workouts, we were a more connected team. Guys that just were more concerned about their teammates and sometimes less concerned about themselves. And, you know, anytime you hear the word culture thrown around all the time, you know, you're trying to build a culture like every coach is. But ideally what you're doing every year is you're attracting more and more like-minded people. And it just felt like this team, and the staff, everybody, we had more like-minded people who all were kind of in it for the same reasons. And our players have seen, they've seen Miami in the past few years and how some selfishness, you know, by some guys has cost us. And they wanted to be the change. They wanted to be the solution. And after three games, it's still early, but they've seen that it works and we are playing better because of it.
We're talking Cane football, Manny Diaz, the head coach. I love the way you just answered that a lot of coaches talk about culture, because the fact, Manny, is, you know, every coach talks about culture, and I talk about it all the time myself. I'm really curious about this. Like, culture isn't, it would seem like, what is the difference among cultures with programs? Aren't teams looking and coaches looking for similar things? Get better every single day, maximize what you have, make good choices. Like, how different is culture program to program?
Yeah, I mean, as to your point, I mean, no one's saying, let's not get better every day, right? I mean, there are certain things that all coaches are certainly saying. I think the key is alignment, you know, from top to bottom in the organization, and everybody, you know, singing out of the same hymn book. We have a great example here in this town, of course, with the Heat. You know, the Heat's culture has been built for years. But what you see is that sometimes with the players, they have better players and they have a chance to go to the playoffs. Last year, they didn't make the playoffs. Still a great culture. But they changed some of their personnel, attracted some maybe more like-minded people to that roster. And then, you know, the weirdness of 2020, but look what they've been able to do. So it's not just culture in terms of what you write down on a piece of paper and expect everyone to follow it. You've got to be consistent with it. And then ultimately, you got to attract the like-minded people who buy into those type of things and want the things that culture subscribes to.
God, isn't that so true, right, about the Heat? And they would tell you this themselves. Their culture is absolutely amazing, top to bottom. Like, there is that so-called line that runs right through it. Now, that doesn't guarantee success every single year. They would be the first ones to tell you, there are some years where we get our heads kicked in, but we're consistent with our culture. Man, I'm curious, have you ever spent any time with Pat Riley? I mean, people revere this guy so much. Even superstar players are in awe of this guy. Have you ever spent any time with him and talked culture with him?
I haven't had the opportunity to speak with Pat, but I do know some people in the organization. And actually, Spo and I go back a long time. We sort of both got into our professions at the same time, at the same sort of level, and had a mutual friend. So that's been kind of cool to follow his rise and get to know some people, you know, high up in that organization as well.
He's a great coach. I think he is a great coach. I made the point the other day, Manny, that if people are now saying, well, he's vindicated, he's validated, he's got this team in the finals, I would call BS on that. This guy is a great coach and has been a great coach. Also, Manny, Ed Reed came on this show a few weeks back. We talked a little bit about his role within the program as chief of staff. What's it been like to work with him, and what do you want your players to take away from him when they spend time with him?
Ed's phenomenal. Yeah, I almost call him, talk about culture, he's almost our culture coordinator, you know, because, you know, he knows the very fabric of what it means to be a Miami Hurricane. And because of his role, and he's not on the staff where, you know, he's got that direct, I control your playing time relationship like an assistant coach does. You know, let's say a guy's not going to treatment as often as he should. You know, when Ed Reed pulls you inside, say, "Hey, man, you know, why are you not taking care of your body the best way you can?" That's just going to hit differently than, you know, if the safety coach says that, or the linebackers coach, or whatever. It's just different to have a guy like that, and his understanding of locker room dynamics and just team in general. He can see things. He can see something out of someone's body language during practice. He can alert me to so many things that, you know, in the staff, that when we're into the weeds and the minutia of the X's and O's at times, you know, that you may miss. you know, and so to have a guy with his eyes, and not to mention what he did on the field, but just who he is as a person, it can't help but make us better.
We're talking to Manny Diaz for a few moments. You know, Manny, when you talk about what players should be doing right now, I've had a number of coaches on the show this year who have talked about how emotional they got either before the season opener or after it because of all the work that the players and the coaches had to do to make sure that there would be a season. You've got this bye week right now, which means the routine is going to get shaken up a little bit. So what's your message to your players about protecting themselves and the team during this time?
Yeah, well, I told our team in the locker room after the FSU win that our most difficult opponent was coming up. And, of course, everybody thought Clemson. I said, it's going to be the bye week. And no disrespect to Clemson, but idle time is a scary thing this year because our guys have been phenomenal. We came back to workouts here midsummer when Miami was the hotspot in all of America in terms of positivity rates for coronavirus. And if at any time it turns sideways here in that summertime, I'm not sure we'd be playing right now. And I'm not sure the ACC would be playing right now. So I told my guys every week I'm in awe of them, of what they have done. They have done things that I could find you so many articles of people saying it's impossible. There's no way. The kids can't do it. They won't do it. And they've done it. And I think it's made us stronger as a team. It's brought us together. But like I tell them every week, I respect them because they've got to be relentless because the virus is relentless. You know, we're only as good as our last test. And every time we get the results, we celebrate them.
It is true. I've got a son in college, Manny, so I know the challenge. And we talk to our son about this all the time, and there's so much around them and so many temptations and so many opportunities, and they've got to make the right choices. So you're getting ready for Clemson. You said something I thought was really interesting in talking about the time you faced them in Charlotte. Quote, it felt like they were playing the game and we were playing the occasion. End of quote. That is really interesting to me. Can you lay that out? What did you mean by that?
Well, let's talk about like even next week, for example. You know, and if Clemson wins this weekend, it's going to be a battle of top 10 teams, and everybody will make a big deal about it. And for Clemson, these are the games that they're used to playing in. And for a while, they weren't. Clemson was building their program, and they weren't used to playing in those games, and it was different for them. And then, you know, you become accustomed to that. And that game we played, you know, we had obviously beaten Notre Dame that year in a big game, but just being in Charlotte, and we were a step away from the college football playoff if we had won that night. And you just felt like Clemson was just playing, and our guys were a little, you know, looking around, you know, and like as if the moment was too big for them, especially maybe early on. And by that point, they were able to get a big lead on us. So we're trying to build our programs where it's not that big of a deal that we're in a top 10 matchup, you know, Saturday night national TV. We're more accustomed to that, but there's still a long way to go in our process, just like it took Clemson a long way to get to where they are right now.
I was going to say, so what do, right? It's a process. And if they're part of the process is, this is who we are, this is what we do, this is where we live, this is normal. And if your process is, hey, we're getting there, it's going to be our normal, we're not quite there yet, but it's still part of the process, and maybe they're further down the road in that process, what then is your message to your team?
Right. Well, just play the game, right? Let all the sideshow be the sideshow. And what's helped us is that, you know, look, we've had College Game Day at our last two games. You know, we've been on national TV the last two Saturday nights. And remember, 3 weeks ago, nobody was talking about the Miami Hurricanes. Like, we were out in the pasture of irrelevancy in college football. So we see how things can change very quickly and how people who can be saying very negative things about you can be saying very positive things very quickly. And it can go back in the other direction very quickly as well. So I think the team is a little bit more mature in that way to understand that, hey, listen, let's make the game about the game. Let's focus on our jobs and just go to work, really.
Hey, Manny, last thought. You've been really good with your time. I appreciate it. But what you just said about how it can change so quickly and people can be saying really nice things about you or some really terrible things about you, and it can change quickly. Are you more concerned about what your players hear or what your players might tweet or post?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're always more concerned about what they're saying, right? Obviously, you can't control what they see. And we all know what, you know, the good and bad of social media, and it's obviously filled with a lot of negativity. But as long as we control our messaging and who we are and who we say we are, and our players, their opinion of their game is dictated by the people inside this building and not by the people on the outside, that's what we talk about all the time, you know, that respect the opinion of the locker room and the staff and let everybody on the outside judge it, you know, good or bad, however they may judge it.
There is so much good information in that conversation. As I mentioned, Miami's out fast. They're 3-0. They're number 8 in both polls. A bye week right now, and then a big one at Clemson on October 10th. The head coach of the Canes is Manny Diaz. Manny, great conversation. Thank you very much for doing that, and I appreciate the time, as always.
You got it. I always enjoy it.
Good time. Manny, thank you. I got a lot out of that. There were some really interesting tidbits in that. All right, so we are open now for the rest of the hour. 1-800-636-8686. Good, good interview day once again. DeForest Buckner of the Colts came in hour number one. Hope you heard that. Sam Amick was in. Manny Diaz, head coach of the Canes. 3-0, top 10. And they take on Clemson after the bye, who is top ranked. I want to get you my preview for Mark Mattson, if possible. It's a really good podcast. Matt in L.A., went Matt in LA times 10. Brad in Corona went Brad in Corona in response to Matt in LA times 10. Anybody else want to participate? The Astros are fully embracing the heat, the hate suddenly. The Twins out again. They're done. Are you watching the early morning action in Major League Baseball in the postseason? I know the big head James Kelly is. Phone lines are open. Hit me, 1-800-636-8686.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Dell Technologies Advisor. They are focused on you. Ready to offer tailored solutions powered by Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Call a Dell Technologies Advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. All right, so more baseball news for you. As of yesterday, the comically massive number of Major League Baseball playoff teams has been reduced from 16 to something slightly less comical, 13. You've got Cleveland, Buffalo, Toronto, and Minnesota all on their way home. New York, Tampa Bay, H-Town, all moving on.
One out away, the Astros from moving on. That's strike three from Presley, and the Astros win it 3-1, and they sweep the wild card series 2-0. Holding the Twins offense completely in check. Watch out. Here comes Houston.
ESPN. Quote, watch out. Here comes Houston. All right. So watch out. Here comes Houston. If you hate the Astros, and, you know, seemingly everybody outside of Houston does, then you're not going to like that. You're going to hate that. You're going to hate, watch out. Here comes Houston. Not me. I don't have that same kind of level of disdain or hate. Hate's a strong word now. You might hate the result. You might hate the team. You might hate the guys. Not me. I don't feel like I don't like a lot of what I saw and heard from them. Absolutely. But I'm not here to hate. It's got nothing to do with how I feel about the Astros, really, in a way. But rather how much content this bastardized 2-game series just provided. As an example, forget Houston for a second. Why don't we just talk about the Twins? Yesterday was, in fact, their 18th playoff loss in a row. I repeat, 18. 18 in a row, dating all the way back to 2004. That is spanning 7 different postseason appearances, 6 in which they won their division. So follow along with this. The Twins never lost more than 47% of their regular season games in any of those past 7 years that they earned a trip to the postseason, including this one. Yet, they somehow managed to lose 100% of all their games after those regular seasons, including this one. Pandemic P can't believe how horrible a playoff showing that is. A team that averaged nearly 5 runs a game this season just put up all of 2 runs in 2 days in the postseason. Yeah, I know. That'll happen in the postseason. You'll run into good pitching in the postseason. Yeah, well, especially if you're the Twins. And now they're gone. Do you know how hard it is to lose 18 straight playoff games? Do you know how hard that is?
SB Nation does. They calculated those odds at 0.00565%. I've got another question for you. My earlier question was, how bad would you have to be at football to be an underdog against the Jets? I've got another serious question that I would like your clones help with. Would you rather be, for instance, the Seattle Mariners and go 19 years without going, or be the Twins and go 18 playoff games without winning? In other words, is it better to show up and lose every single time, or is it better to never ever show up at all? I mean, I never thought that I would see or say or think of a time where I'd rather be the Mariners than anybody else in baseball, but I might rather be the Mariners than the Twins. That streak really is too much. 16 years, 6 divisional titles, a wild card berth, and 0 playoff wins. Holy hell, I mean, that is unthinkably bad for the Twins. Unthinkably awesome for somebody like me, who only roots for things to talk about, but unthinkably bad for an organization, which is really not a bad organization. Like the Mariners, bad organization. Twins have had success, man. Speaking of things to talk about, which is all I ever want anyway, let's go back to H-Town for a minute. They're the ones who sent the Twins packing. I mean, everybody does, but they're the latest. No secret that the baseball world does not like the Astros. Just like it's no secret that the Astros have not exactly helped their own cause in that image rebuild department. The apology tour was probably worse than the trash can scandal itself. Like Jim Crane, he said the title isn't even tainted. The Astros players haven't shown any remorse whatsoever. They've done nothing to endear themselves to anybody since it went down. And now you've got shortstop Carlos Correa. He had the go-ahead dong last night. He would like to ask all of you what you have to say to him and the rest of them right about now.
I know a lot of people are mad. I know a lot of people don't want to see us here. But what are they going to say now? You know, we're a solid team. We play great baseball. We won a series on the road in Minnesota. So what are they going to say now?
Like, I like Carlos. In a way, I don't like what they collectively did or represent, but I like a lot of the guys on the team. Like, I like him. But that might be my favorite 11-second soundbite ever.
I know.
Go ahead, Rick.
I know a lot of people are mad. I know a lot of people don't want to see us here, but what are they going to say now? You know, we're a solid team. We play great baseball. We won a series on the road in Minnesota. So what are they going to say now?
I mean, I think I could do 11 hours on those 11 seconds. And again, for the millionth time, I'm not rooting for teams. I don't care who wins or loses. The only thing I root for is something to talk about. But that statement, man, that quote is something else. First off, how about that epic troll job of knowing that you're the heel and that everybody is here to hate you, but leaning hard into it. Leaning hard. Quote, I know a lot of people are mad. I know a lot of people don't want to see us here, but what are they going to say now? End quote. It's a very good question, Carlos. What are they going to say now? I mean, I don't want to speak for the people, but I've got a few ideas of what they might say. People might say you just beat a team that has not won a playoff game in more than a decade and a half. People might say that you just won a series which was a gimmicky best of three during a pandemic. People might say you don't get credit for a road win when there are no fans in the building, especially since no team in the history of the world has benefited more from ducking crowds than you. People might say you're flexing and stunting and flossing a little early, you know, considering you just advanced to the ALDS and not the World Series, and there's about a month of playoff baseball still to play. That's what people might say. In other words, people may not be nearly as impressed with you as you are with you. But then again, I don't want to speak for the people. I'm just saying that's what they might say. Here's what I will say. Man, keep doing you, my man. Keep trolling. keep pimping best of three wins in a gimmicky wild card round against a team that hasn't won a playoff game since you were 10. Keep asking the haters what they have to say to you after you finish off step one of your four-step journey. Keep doing your touchdown dance 75 yards short of the end zone. I mean, it's awesome. I'm here for it. You're the same guy who told Cody Bellinger that he didn't know what he was talking about and to shut the F up when Cody clearly knew what he was talking about. I mean, you are the same guy who struck out and mocked or was mocked by pouty-faced Joe Kelly after he threw over your head. And you're the same guy asking the haters what they have to say now on October 30th or September 30th when October has not yet even started when you made those comments. In other words, my man, you are a content machine. They hate you, but I love you. Man, I love you. I'm here for it. Keep these takes coming. What do you think about us now? How you like us now? What do you have to say about us now? What, because you beat the Twins in a best of three series? And the Twins haven't won in 18 playoff games? What do we have to say about you now? I don't know. You cheat? Come on, man. I mean, I know there's going to be that moment where you want to say that. It's still premature. You don't get to say that after you beat the Twins in the postseason. In a gimmicky little three-game series. In the midst of a pandemic. Where there are no fans in the stands. All right, we are coming back. And when we do, maybe my thoughts on the Mad Dog. Probably my thoughts on Conor McGregor, actually. The good news is, Conor may have a fight. Bad news is who he might fight. That's coming up next. First up, though, let me get you a bottom of the hour sports update. Busy Thursday. Rich is trying to land that plane. It's Thursday. The Thursday jumbo jet. Just trying to get that thing down, Rich. You're almost there. Ball game.
Ball game.
Welcome back. All right. Speaking of ball game, Mark Stein tweeted, the Heat say Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo are doubtful for Friday's game two. Jim Rome states, this series is over. Listen, everything being equal, they had a real problem. Yeah, yes, I was on the air saying yesterday, man, the Heat are tough. They're going to be a tough out. Yeah, that whole thing about they're going to be a tough out, I was wrong. They're not going to be a tough out. I can't take back what I said because I said it, but I will acknowledge that that was not a strong take. Of course, that was based on the fact that I thought they'd be 100% healthy, but they're not. Their three best players are banged up. They're not going to be a tough out. It's not going to be a long series. And in fact, that series is probably over already because they are busted up. Speaking of the Lakers and the Heat, for whatever reason, if you have not still found your way to this, if you've been laying out from the Jim Rome podcast, now is a good time to do what very little you have to do to find it. It is not hard. Some of you just do not understand the podcast game or the landscape. And you're annoyed by it. You're intimidated by it. It is not hard. We can help you find this. And believe me, once you do, you will be happy. Because America's favorite NBA teammate has come on over to America's favorite side hustle pod. That's right. Mark the Mad Dog Madsen is my guest this week for episode 145.
Out of the University of Stanford, or Stanford University, if you like. He is a crowd favorite. Didn't play very much, but when he played with an intensity that no other Laker ever exceeded. He was the guy that went and picked the regulars' laundry up and brought it to their rooms. He was the guy that carried their bags from the hotel lobby up to their rooms. That's enough. Mark Madsen.
Thank you to the greatest fans in the world. And to those who speak Spanish, les agradecemos y les decimos que el año que viene
Man, RIP Chick. That was amazing, you know, because we always hear the Mad Dog, and the Mad Dog's so amazing in the way he shows up, but you never hear that intro that Chick Hearn gave him. Now, understand, if you're from this area, like I grew up on Chick Hearn. Chick Hearn, to me, is the greatest play-by-play basketball announcer ever. Ever. Like, nobody can touch Chick. And I've told the story, but as a young broadcaster, when I first met Chick, and I was at UC Santa Barbara on the way up, Chick could not have been nicer. Chick was incredible. Chick gave a speech at a luncheon in Santa Barbara, and I came to see him, and I taped it, and I interviewed him, and he could not have been more gracious. But he shredded the Mad Dog.
Check out of the this. University of Stanford, or Stanford University, if you like. He is a crowd favorite. Didn't play very much, but when he played with an intensity that no other Laker ever exceeded. He was the guy that went and picked the regulars' laundry up and brought it to their rooms. He was the guy that carried their bags from the hotel lobby up to their rooms.
Chick's like, hey, he didn't play very much. And he got them their laundry and their luggage. And brought it to their room. Wow. My man, Chick. Anyway, what's poppin', Twitter? Mad Dog's incredible. Mad Dog is a Stanford man. Mad Dog was more than just somebody who got their laundry and carried their bags. He was a 9-year NBA vet. Now, that might have been accurate when Chick said it. But in the final analysis, he had a really nice NBA career. 9 years, 2-time NBA champ. A current college coach, rare combination of extremely intense, but extremely mindful, thoughtful, kind. Very few people in this world, much less in that game, are as beloved as Mark Madsen, and he is one of them. And given how much is going on in the world of basketball right now, especially with the Lakers, he is a perfect guest for our pod. We covered a lot of ground with the Mad Dog, from his draft day phone call from Phil Jackson to the moment he had to break the news to his team at Utah Valley, where he coaches, that their season would be canceled and they would not play in their postseason tournament. But I want to play back some audio from his time with the Lakers in the early 2000s, where he spent the first 3 years of his career with the two biggest stars in the game, Shaq and Kobe. Starting with Shaq. Shaq not only tried to play matchmaker for Mad Dog, he also tried to get Madsen to chill the hell out at practice.
One day Shaq came into practice and he said to me, hey man, look, you got to chill out. Can't be running 100 miles an hour the whole practice. He said, if you go out there and go crazy like that, I'm going to try to dunk on you every single time. And he said, if you chill out a little bit, I'll take a few more fadeaway jumpers. Nice. When you get pounded on by Shaq every day, sometimes you have to chill out just a little bit, you know, which I did, but not by much. I mean, look, that was kind of my game. I was an energy guy, and because I didn't have some of the unique abilities that my teammates had. So I had to go hard. I had to bring it every single night to practice and to the games. And ultimately, I think Shaq respected that.
You know what's interesting is Shaq adored the Mad Dog. Mad Dog loved Shaq. And in fact, so much so, he defended Shaq's work ethic on the podcast and said that Shaq put in way more hours than nobody ever saw. I thought that was interesting. Obviously, the Kobe reflection is extremely bittersweet for everybody, especially Mark Madsen. He tells the story of how he found out in Sunday church that his former teammate had tragically passed, but he also told me that Kobe wasted no time in making him a better, tougher, stronger NBA player.
My second year, Kobe really started pushing me and challenging me probably harder than I've ever been challenged before or since. And that was difficult for me, Jim, because I'd never been pushed in that way by a teammate or a coach. It was really hard. A couple times, Kobe would get after me so much in practice. I mean, one or two times, I waited for him after practice. And I said, I don't like that. Man, I'm good with telling me X, Y, or Z, but this other thing you said, I don't like that. Now, Kobe was pushing me to be the best player I could be. And I think I probably needed to develop a thicker skin. And I think Kobe probably saw that, and he was probably trying to help me with that. And so there were some uncomfortable moments for me personally. But the one thing I'll say is when I got upset because he was getting after me. But most of the time, we would talk about it later in the day. And it didn't happen that often. But I really respect that he would always listen. That was part of my growing and maturation process to learn how to get tougher. I tell people now, I say, look, I played with Kobe. I could play with anyone.
Mad Dog. I mean, this in playback is so good. This conversation is so good. And he had further thoughts about Kobe as well. And obviously, it's still a hard time for anybody who knew Kobe. And it's just, it's painful, it's surreal, and it's hard to imagine, even to this day. Speaking of being around greatness, he was an assistant for the Lakers in LeBron's first year in L.A. He said, yes, his physical skills are off the charts, but don't get it twisted either. LeBron's basketball IQ is every bit as impressive.
I truly believe LeBron is one of those guys that's just mentally extremely, extremely smart. Okay, so that's the first thing. But then there's a lot of smart people that you know, never kind of do anything special. But I think when you combine how smart he is with how much he's studied the game, how much tape he has watched, all the experience, you know, all the thousands of playoff minutes, I think that's one piece of it. And then the other piece is, yes, he does have off-the-charts physical attributes, but, I mean, Jim, the 1 year I was with him, probably 90% of the time, he was one of the first people in the facility in terms of the players every single day. And you're talking about your superstar 90% of the time being the first guy in the facility to do the extra treatment, to do the extra weight training and strength training, to do the stretching, to get his shots up. It's special to watch.
It is. So we're still watching all of that as a 35-year-old LeBron is in his 17th year, and there are nights when he is still the best player in the world and can do whatever the hell he wants. As for the team itself, understand that Mark Mattson and I had this conversation prior to Game 1, but we did talk about the Heat, and he had some insight into the world-famous Miami Heat culture. This is really interesting if you've never heard this.
I've had teammates that had played for the Heat and then come up to the Timberwolves, and I've asked, you know, what is it about the Heat culture? And obviously it starts with Pat Riley. One thing about the Heat culture, if your body fat is above a certain threshold, you don't practice. The rule in that program is if I'm a big guy and I'm 35 and my body fat's supposed to be 9, if I come in there and I'm 10, they just say, get on the exercise bike. You're not practicing today. Do a 50-minute exercise with your heart rate monitored, with your heart rate over 150 for, you know, 30, 40 minutes, then go ahead and practice.
In other words, get your flabby, Dodger-loving boobies on that bike.
Big old flabby, Dodger-loving boobies.
It's amazing, right, that they measure your body fat that frequently. And if you're a point over, they won't even let you practice. They literally won't even let you practice. And not like they send you home. They're like, hey, man, you go to the gym. You take care of that right now. And then you can join the rest of us. Heat culture, baby. And then finally, since he's been around long enough that Kobe and LeBron came into the league as Mike was leaving and Shaq was there, like, Mark Mattson's been around all of it. He's played alongside these guys. He's coached these guys. He went up against these guys. You know, I had to drag him into that whole debate. Who then is the GOAT since you were there for all of it up close?
I grew up watching Michael. You know, for me personally, Michael's one. Michael's one. I coached LeBron for one season. You talk about a talent. LeBron is not only someone that can take over the game offensively, but he makes everyone around him, he enhances their game. He helps everyone else's game flourish because he's 6'9", 6'10". He can see over the defense, and his passing is unbelievable. But in terms of that number two spot, I have to roll with Kobe. And the reason why is because, number one, I played with him. But number two, I think you could throw the ball over to Kobe, and he could rise up over three defenders and make a shot with guys hanging all over him. But, yeah, I mean, it's close between all those three, but that's where I stand on it.
That was so great. Like, I started the interview by asking him, I said, hey, Mad Dog, I know that you take care of yourself and you're a super high-energy guy. Do you ever get out there on the floor with your guys at practice? He's the coach at Utah Valley. He said, I do. I always do. I said, true or not true, I heard you dunked on one of your guys. And he begged off that completely. He's like, no, that didn't happen. I'm like, Mad Dog, I heard that did happen. And he didn't want to own that. So if he's not going to own that, and I guess I know he doesn't want to embarrass one of his players, but there's no way he's going to answer the GOAT question, right? But he did. But he did. And if you hear the entire conversation in its context and in its entirety, he literally could not have been any more effusive about Shaq. And not only personally, but professionally. And in talking about his skill set, he could not have been any more effusive in the way he talked about Kobe and what Kobe meant to him as a teammate and a man. Could not have been any more effusive than what he had to say about LeBron. So I figured it had to be one of the Lakers. And then he said, hey, look, the way I grew up, it's Mike. He answered the question. So I was shocked, one, that he answered the question, and then a little bit shocked that he answered it the way he did. But it goes back to Sam Amick. And what Sam Amick said, that, you know, I'm kind of a product of the 80s. It really depends how old you are. I got to say that. It depends how you came up. For instance, I know a lot of people, when you want to talk about the GOAT in the NFL, no matter what, all day long, Joe Montana, Joe Montana. Yeah, but what about Tom Brady? Yeah, well, what about him? Joe Montana is like Mike. You're not talking people off that point, depending on how old they are. You know, Mike, Joe, yeah, but LeBron, or Kobe, or Tom Brady. But I thought Mark Madsen again, played with Shaq, played with Kobe, coached him, coached LeBron, and said, yeah, but it's Mike. That's a really good conversation. Mad Dog, if you need him, and really, who doesn't? Also, here are all the other great NBA stories. My man is a walking, talking, anecdotal machine. Check it out. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, JimRome.com, or just use the link, which is pinned to the top of my Twitter feed right now. Vic in NoCal tweets, I can never touch chick. Signed, Caleb in Green Bay.
Didn't play very much, but when he played with an intensity that no other Laker ever exceeded.
Thanks,
he
Vic.
Was the guy that went and picked the regulars' laundry up and brought it to their rooms.
That's it. We're done. You have a great day. My thanks to DeForest Buckner, Sam Amick, Manny Diaz, the Mad Dog, and you clones. We're out.